Take your Wi-Fi further with wall-to-wall Wi-Fi from Xfinity. With fast speeds and reliable coverage, home just got even sweeter with the Xfinity 10G network. Restrictions apply. Not available in all areas. Actual speeds vary.
From KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Coming up on Forum this morning, the Trump administration has rejected California's request for a wildfire disaster declaration. We'll talk about what it could mean for wildfire relief in the state. And California Republicans are continuing to use unofficial ballot drop boxes despite a cease and desist order from the state. We'll get an update on the battle over the GOP drop boxes. And then, when will Bay Area schools reopen? We'll talk about why some schools are already opening to in-person learning and why others have no end in sight for distance learning only. We'll want to hear from you. How well do you think your school system is handling reopening? That's all next, after this news. Good morning and welcome to this morning's Forum program. I'm Michael Krasny. The California Republican Party is continuing to use unauthorized vote-by-mail drop boxes despite a cease and desist letter from California Secretary of State Alex Padilla and Attorney General Javier Becerra. The unofficial boxes have been found in districts with closely contested congressional races and have been widely criticized by state Democrats as an attempt to confuse voters. Republicans argue that the boxes are a lawful form of ballot harvesting, which allows voters to designate someone else to collect and return their ballot under state law. Joining us now to talk about this is KQED Politics and Government Editor Scott Schaefer, and we're also going to talk with him initially about the Trump administration's decision announced today to reject California's request for wildfire disaster relief. And welcome, Scott.
Hey, Michael. Good morning.
Good morning to you. Well, the Trump administration did reject this request. It was in a letter from Governor Newsom back in September, late September. This would have mean essentially hundreds of millions of dollars to clean up damage from the six recent fires across the state. And it can be appealed. It will be appealed. But let's look at the motives behind the Trump administration's decision. What are they?
Well, I don't want to say what the motives are because this is a very much developing story. I did talk with Brian Ferguson of the Office of Emergency Services just within the last half hour. And, you know, he makes it clear that they will be appealing. They don't seem particularly stunned by this. The Trump administration has approved these kinds of requests for presidential declarations in the past for wildfires and other disasters. And clearly, you know, this wildfire season has been a particularly bad, a historically bad one with really bad fires in L.A., Fresno, Madera counties, Mendocino, San Bernardino, San Diego, and Siskiyou. And so the administration sent this letter requesting disaster relief funds, more than 4 million acres burned in 2020. That's, I think, double the state's previous record. And so the Trump administration in responding, FEMA in responding, said that the standards had not been met based on their review. So I did, as I said, talk to Brian Ferguson and earlier this morning, and this is how he described what the status of this request is.
You know, this is not the end of our discussions and our process with the federal government. We're very much in the middle of this. Discussions with FEMA or with other federal agencies can continue via letters and via legal documents for months or even years. So we continue to work expeditiously to, you know, turn on those programs to leverage just every ounce of federal support we can get. But this is very much an ongoing process.
And he did say, Michael, that there are other pots of federal money that are available, like for small businesses and for, you know, individuals. As I said, this presidential declaration is the highest standard. And so they, you know, they only apply for these when they think they've got all of the verification and the data that they need to get it. So, you know, I think they're not pulling the, you know, the pushing the panic button at this point, but clearly it was a surprise. And of course, you know, as your question was, what are the motives? And the initial, you know, the tendency is going to be to say, oh, this is political. This is, you know, this is Trump trying to get Newsom back. You know, that may be true. It may not be true. And it may all work out in the end. This is not the first time that this sort of haggling back and forth has happened over an emergency declaration. A few years ago, something similar happened with parts of the Oroville Dam. There were, you know, questions about whether it was on state land, federal land. So they haggled back and forth and they finally resolved that. So, you know, as Brian Ferguson suggested, this is, you know, not the end of the story, but it is surprising to say the least.
Well, the president did approve wildfire relief over the summer, and there are other sources of funding, FEMA grants, for example, as you mentioned, but no reasons were given, which is why I asked about motive. You remember the president had claimed the state was not doing enough to prevent wildfires. He said Governor Newsom did a terrible job, forest management, not raking enough leaves, I guess, like they do in Finland. And this state faces over a $54 billion deficit because of the pandemic. It needs these funds to rebuild communities, to rebuild buildings, to essentially fix damaged roads and bridges. It's vital, isn't it?
Absolutely. And, you know, that was all included in the letter that the governor sent to FEMA and to the president. Damage, as you said, to, you know, all kinds of infrastructure, not just homes and buildings, but bridges, schools, libraries, water and power facilities, other infrastructure. A number of people have been killed. And, you know, this is extremely expensive. I mean, there are tremendous costs, hundreds of millions of dollars for equipment and firefighters, fire retardant. There are all kinds of planes and helicopters, emergency shelters, of course, that get set up. So, you know, this is very expensive. It is a somewhat standard kind of request, the kind of things that we see for hurricanes and floods, wildfires, and so on. And as you said, Trump has so far, FEMA through and the Trump administration have granted all of these. And, you know, the president has said very recently that he has a good relationship with Newsom. Newsom was even featured briefly in an ad, which I'm sure he was not happy with, the governor. But nonetheless, they do try to maintain, despite all the political differences, which are major, they do try to maintain a good relationship for just things like this.
And we should mention that some of the stories that have come about as a result of this denial or refusal at this point have mentioned Wade Crowfoot, California cabinet secretary, confronting President Trump on climate change. One could assume falling on deaf ears, Scott?
Well, you know, certainly that was big news a few weeks ago when the president was here. And yes, the governor's natural resources director did confront him, and I'm sure the president, you know, did not appreciate that. But I think we need to be careful to ascribe what has happened here with this request to be directly related to that. It might be, but it's not something that we're going to know. It's easy to speculate about, and it certainly wouldn't be inconsistent with the president's behavior on other issues in the past. But as I said, FEMA at the Office of Emergency Services this morning, at least, is not saying that. And, you know, they're going to be appealing this initial rejection of the request.
Talking with Scott Schaefer, senior editor of KQED's California Politics and Government Desk and co-host of KQED's Political Breakdown. And if you have thoughts about the Trump administration's decision to not give California disaster aid, we do want to hear from you. You can give us a call right now at our toll-free number. That number is 866-733-6786. Again, the number for your calls, 866-733-6786, or get in touch on Twitter and Facebook. We're at KQED Forum, or email forum@kqed.org. I did, as I said in the introduction, also want to talk with you, Scott, about the voting drop boxes. As I said, this has essentially been challenged with a cease and desist letter, not only from Secretary of State Padilla, but also Attorney General Becerra, both Democrats, we should mention. And this is essentially a Democrat law that allows, at least from the Republican perspective, their notion that they can do this.
Yeah, this was a law that was passed in 2016, sponsored by Lorena Gonzalez from San Diego, assemblywoman down there. And it, as you said, it allowed for independent or third-party collection of ballots. It's been sort of disparaged as ballot harvesting. I think ballot collection is the official term for it. And Democrats, maybe because it was the law that they wrote, as you said, and Governor Brown, Jerry Brown, signed it, perhaps they were most familiar with it, but they certainly made good use of it in the 2018 midterm elections. The Democrats picked up 7 congressional seats that had been held by Republicans, and a number of those seats were not decided until weeks after the election. And, you know, that was simply because of the number of ballots that came in late, a lot of provisional ballots that need to be verified. But also, you know, there were a lot of ballots collected legally by third parties, as is allowed under this law. And Republicans were quite honest. I mean, there were, of course, President Trump saying it was fraud, and Devin Nunes from the Central Valley saying it was bizarre, and Paul Ryan, the speaker at the time, saying it was bizarre. But, you know, I think Republicans also realized, look, we got to get in the game here. If we can't, you know, beat them, we got to join them. And so that's what has been happening in the last couple weeks. Last weekend, some of these boxes popped up in counties where there are competitive congressional races: Fresno, Orange County, and Los Angeles County. And I think the initial problem was how they were labeled. They were labeled to almost, well, they said official ballot boxes, and they were not official. They were not condoned or set up by the county or by local election officials. They were apparently put up by local Republican officials. And that is where I think the initial outrage occurred. They were deceptive. Attorney General Becerra and, as you said, Secretary of State Padilla sent that cease and desist letter order to them, to the Republican Party, saying that it was, you know, illegal, but also it was irresponsible, that it was tampering with a citizen's right to vote. But the Republican Party pushed back. They said, no, look, we could have put better, the labels could have been labeled more accurately. And they did take those boxes down, and so there are no more boxes saying official, you know, ballot boxes. Those are gone. But they say, look, we're just playing by the rules you created. We don't like the rules. In fact, Republicans were very critical of this law when it was passed and then amended afterwards. And they would just soon see it go away. But they're saying, look, this is the chessboard you set up, and we're just playing on your chessboard. So we'll see what happens. The Attorney General's office told me yesterday that they are reviewing the letter that the California GOP sent back to them. And it could be that, Becerra and Padilla overreacted. We'll have to see what happens.
Well, the Republican chair, Hector Bareja, said, we'll eat crow on that. We'll take the word official off. And they did presumably take it off. But this is not only L.A., Fresno, and Orange counties. It was more widespread than that, than initially thought. In fact, it was also used in the March primary. So we've got kind of a multidimensional concern here from both parties in the usual partisan party politics. We're going to also invite listeners to weigh in on this. And if you have some thoughts about this or questions about this, we do welcome your involvement in the program. Stephen from San Jose said on the fires, by the way, that the federal government should be helping a continuation of gamesmanship, which is harmful to everyone. And Davey says, are these drop boxes for GOP ballots only? Hasn't this practice been made legal by the recent ballot harvesting law? And I think, Scott, you had already answered that question. We're coming up on a break. We'll be gone for about 60 seconds, but you do indeed have an opportunity to join the program, and we invite you to do that. Join us by phone toll-free at 866-733-6786, or you can get in touch on Twitter and Facebook. We're at KQED Forum, or email us, forum@kqed.org. You're listening to Forum on KQED Public Radio. Scott Schaefer, our guest. I'm Michael Krasny. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny, and we're talking about the ongoing battle between the California Republican Party and state officials over unofficial ballot drop boxes with Scott Schaefer, senior editor of KQED's California Politics and Government Desk, and co-host of Marisa Lagos of KQED's Political Breakdown. Getting some comments here and questions. Let me just clarify one other thing before I go to these and our callers with you, Scott, and that is these boxes, as I said, initially said official on them, but that was taken off. But there are also other requirements. The boxes are supposed to be supposed to be made of particular materials and have narrow slots and be bolted down. There are all kinds of, in other words, security measures, which I think have been quantified. And Marking them official is one thing, but these weren't necessarily adhered to either. I happened to hear former governor, Republican governor Arnold Schwarzenegger, talking about this, and he said this is a stupid thing. These are fake ballot boxes, is how he characterized them.
Well, I think the GOP would push back on that. They don't like Arnold Schwarzenegger much these days, but I think there are certainly specifications for security. They can't just be left like in a park somewhere. And the GOP claimed in that letter they responded with that, in fact, there was security, that they were not outside unattended. They were in places like gun stores and churches and campaign headquarters where people were keeping an eye on them. And they claim that all conforms with the law and the requirements for that. This will all be, we'll see. The AG is looking this over. I know that Alex Hall, who is our reporter in the Fresno Bureau, went around yesterday to some of the locations where these drop boxes had been put in Fresno County in that 21st congressional district, and she couldn't find them. So it appears that at least in Fresno County, that a lot of those boxes, if not all of them, have been removed. They may come back in some other form, but for now, at least some of the places she went to that where they had originally been, there were no boxes.
Well, let me read a question, I think a key question from a listener named Amy, and then we'll go to our callers. Amy wants to know, does the California Republican Party have any way to guarantee that the ballots collected in their boxes are all delivered and counted in a timely manner?
Well, they say that they are, and the same question could be put to Democrats. As they point out, the Republicans in their letter, there is some squishiness in the law in terms of where these ballots are to be kept and for how long. The example they use is you can put them in they can go door to door and collect them in a sack and leave them in the trunk of your car or leave them in your basement for a couple days. I think you have to get them to election officials at the county level within 3 days. I believe that's what the law says. And so, this is what Republicans have complained about since this law was enacted, is that there aren't enough safeguards, that there isn't enough assurance that the custody of the ballots is going to be guaranteed. These are things that Republicans have been complaining about. Now, ironically, Republicans are saying, now the Democrats are trying to suppress the vote. They're trying to suppress Republicans from voting, which certainly I think is a little far-fetched. I mean, especially when you compare what is legitimately being done in other states to suppress the vote in places like Texas and Georgia. But I'm sure they're having a good time turning the tables on Democrats and saying, you're trying to suppress the vote.
Well, President Trump brought up ballot harvesting by Ilhan Omar's people in Minnesota. I guess the only way to really check if these ballots are counted or altered along the way. I think that's a kind of a given.
Well, I think, first of all, they're supposed to be sealed. So if one arrives at a county election office and it's been opened and there's some appearance of votes being changed, that's going to be flagged. And that voter who has to sign the back of the envelope is going to be contacted. So, there are a lot of safeguards. And, I should say that months ago when President Trump was, in full complaint about ballots being sent to all active voters in California, I called registrars of voters in red counties, counties that went overwhelmingly for Donald Trump in 2016. And not a single one of them had any concerns about security of the ballots, and including, this so-called ballot harvesting or ballot collection. I think they feel that there are a lot of safeguards on voting in California, and that these allegations or concerns about fraud are not very well founded.
Well, the president has certainly brought a lot of that to the attention and put a spotlight on it. It goes to the heart of every California voter from his perspective, getting a mail-in voter ballot. But let me bring a caller aboard here. And Jim, let's find out what's on your mind. Join us, please. Jim in Lafayette, are you with us?
Yes, I am with you.
Oh, please, go ahead.
Okay. We have a cabin at Huntington Lake in Huckleberry Tract, which is on federal land. And we have a permit for that cabin. We have 64 cabins in our tract. 44 of them were destroyed by the Creek Fire. The Forest Service is responsible for protecting and maintaining that forest. This is the Sierra National Forest. The Forest Service was not on the job. They allowed huge log decks of dead trees to be stacked in the immediate vicinity of our track and that contributed like matchsticks to the fire that destroyed all these cabins. We desperately need FEMA help because we have no support from the county or the state for services, since this is not fee-owned land. So wanted to pass that comment on.
I'm glad you did, Jim, and I thank you for that. In fact, apropos of that, Scott, George says, will the Fed release the wildfire funds if California rescinds its sanctuary laws? Why should the government negotiate with a state that is in open revolt or resistance?
Well, to Jim's point, 57% of the forest lands in California are controlled by the federal government. And so when the president complains that the forests haven't been managed properly, you know, he needs to look in the mirror, because the majority of that land is controlled by the federal government, and a lot of it is also in private hands. So, yeah, to Jim's point, this is something that the federal government needs to take responsibility for. And, you know, and the state has acknowledged, yes, we could all do a better job of managing the forest. This is part of the issue. It is not the major part of the issue. Climate change, of course, is making all of these risks and fires worse. But it's not irrelevant, but it's also sometimes misplaced in terms of its importance.
And back to ballots for a moment, if I could, yeah. Scott. Ryan wants to know, is the California GOP hoping that this will spark a legal battle that would result in the invalidation of mail-in ballots?
You'd have to ask them that. I think that they're trying to bring attention to a system that they don't like, a law that they don't like, a process that they have complained about for many years. And I'm sure that, you know, they're also, if they can also expose a little bit of hypocrisy on the part of Democrats, that would be frosting on the cake.
And another listener wants to know, what are the security protocols around ballot harvesting? Are independent investigators allowed to see how the ballots are handled and delivered to election registrars?
I don't know what you mean by independent investigators. I mean, as soon as you start talking about independent investigators, I think there's concerns about people intimidating voters. The president has called for, and his son have called for, an army of people to appear in Philadelphia, for example, at polling places to make sure that there's no fraud or ballot tampering. I mean, these are the kinds of things. When you start talking about those kinds of things, you begin to infringe upon voters' rights to privacy and the ability to cast a ballot. But there are, like, as I said, there are laws that, you know, the county election officials take these things very seriously. You know, and that's one of the reasons it takes a long time to count all the ballots. You know, we've been saying all along, this is election month in October. People are voting, you know, 2 million people now have voted in California. Those ballots are being processed by county election officials, and those will continue to come in up until election day. And if they're postmarked on election day but arrive up to 17 days later, they will continue to be counted. So, you know, I think that there are safeguards, but one of the reasons we won't know the outcome of all these races, especially the close races for Congress and maybe ballot measures, is that they do take care. They do verify signatures. If they have concerns, they go back to the voter and say, this doesn't look like your signature. You know, they give them an opportunity to what's called cure the ballot. So, this is not the wild, wild west.
Well, we're going to have to leave it there. Thank you, Scott.
You're welcome.
KQED Politics Editor Scott Schaefer. Coming up next, we're going to get an update on school reopening. I'm Michael Krasny. Stay with us.
This is Barbara Leslie, President of the Oakland Port Commission. Oakland International Airport, OAK, is proud to bring you this podcast of KQED's Forum. When you're choosing your next adventure, the smart and convenient choice is to fly the East Bay Way from OAK to destinations across the USA and Mexico. And when you return home, tune in to KQED, always bringing us remarkable stories about who we are and where we live. Enjoy today's episode of Forum.
Take your Wi-Fi further with wall-to-wall Wi-Fi from Xfinity. With fast speeds and reliable coverage, home just got even sweeter with the Xfinity 10G network. Restrictions apply. Not available in all areas. Actual speeds vary.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.